This is the Giraffes Don't Eat Steak podcast, a show that brings you marketing stories, tips, hints, and much more. A treat for those who want to succeed in business or marketers who just want to learn.
Hello, Alex.
Hello, how's it going?
Cold, man. I think it's snowing outside.
Yeah, it's snowing here. That's why I've got my bear jacket on today. It's very nice. It's perfect for this type of weather.
Absolutely. But do you think the weather affects how people respond, like to marketing or surveys? Because I'm busy doing some surveys at the moment.
Well, I guess the answer is always depends. Depends on what the product is. But certainly, I wonder actually, I think maybe like response rates could be higher if the weather is really bad, people are stuck inside. But I don't know. I actually don't know what the answer to that is. I guess it depends on what the product is or the purpose is. But yeah, actually, I'm just about to do some research as well. We're doing some account-based marketing projects. So I'm just sort of segmenting everybody into different groups and different problem types and how our solutions solve those. And then for each of those problem types, I'm creating a bit of, I'm doing some market research and then writing white papers on that, what that problem is and what solutions they need, blah, blah, blah. But I haven't started that. So I'm going to tee you up on this one and see what your thoughts are around and the best way of approaching those kinds of projects.
Well, I mean, the first thing, and this is always difficult, is your target audience, right? Where are they and how are you going to get them to answer your survey questions? I recently did a survey with, or a questionnaire with senior executives in the insurance market. It's really difficult to get them to sit still and complete a questionnaire, right? Like,
yeah,
they're busy people. Usually their PA or secretary doesn't even let the email get through to them. So, hey, you know, how do you reach them? I mean, the first thing we did was just keep it short. We only had 7 questions in there, so that it's, so when we say it's 3 minutes of your time, it literally is 3 minutes of your time.
Yeah.
So they don't drop off halfway.
Yeah. How are you getting to these executives? Are you doing, is it via different avenues depending on what the connection level is on LinkedIn, for example, or are you going through a portal or?
Well, some of it was email based. So we've got email addresses with marketing permission, GDPR, etc. So we can do that. And then I've used direct contacts through LinkedIn. So you can send a message saying, you know, would love to get your feedback. Here's the link to the survey. See how that will. So I've done quite a lot of LinkedIn requests on that. We got just over 70 responses in 2 weeks. So that wasn't too bad. And I think the timing worked. This is why I asked you about weather, because it was just before Christmas. And I'm worried that people were just not in the headspace.
Have you done any follow-ups?
I'm planning it for this week.
Okay.
To see. But we're also like, is it this month? When is the most depressing day of the year?
February. I think it's February. It's the first week of February, isn't it? The first Monday of February, like Blue Monday or something like that. Is that right?
So like that day, well, how will people respond versus a sunny day, right? Depending on what you're asking.
Yeah.
It does affect your mood. Your answers reflect your mood, right? That's it.
Yeah.
It's an interesting one. I don't know if there's any right answer or right time. I think there's wrong times. Like, I think, and maybe not. Maybe if I should have gone out that week between Christmas and New Year where people were relaxed.
Yeah.
And just browsing on their phones and doing less. You know, maybe now when they're back in the office, hit the ground running, it's not the right time.
Yeah. I mean, timing is always important. It always has an influence to some degree or not. But sometimes we're quite constrained.
Yeah.
for example, I know that I've got to do this market research now, and I need to do it now. It's not like I really have the luxury of waiting until the weather is this, that, or the other. Sometimes you just have to go do it and then keep the follow-ups going, to ensure that you are, because some people just miss things. Maybe the email subject line you had on there wasn't, it didn't sound it sounded spammy, or it didn't appeal, something, so just they just overlooked it straight away. But yeah, I think that's the key, is to try and squeeze the lemon, so to speak, of your of the list that you have.
And do you have like a target number of responders you want to reach?
Well, actually, to be honest, the answer probably to most of the questions about my research will be, I don't know yet, because this was an idea that came into my mind 2 days ago on Thursday, and I'm just putting the plans together now. But I think you could say that you need like a minimum of like 1,000 or something if it was research with the public, for example.
Yeah.
But for this particular case, our target audience base is really small. I mean, that's why we can only do account-based marketing, because there's not any space to be doing any mass marketing.
Yeah.
Therefore, I need to take a much more realistic approach to that. And I'm probably only going to get a small percentage of the audience I have. So if I got 100 respondees, I would probably be pretty happy with that, to be honest. And that would be quite a particular market I'm working in.
Yeah, it does depend, right, on the bigger pool. But it can't be too small. That's the only thing, you know. If you can't get 5 responses and then put out a paper on that, that's. I mean, even though factually it's correct, right? 80% of respondents said brackets. Yeah. It was 4.
100 feels like a nice number for me, especially if it's executives. When you're talking about the public, I think they're generally not specialists in what you're asking them. But if you're asking executives or, you know, CEOs of a engineering company, for example, they're going to be pretty on the ball with the subject you're talking about, and will be less opinion politically biased or something like that, which the public may be. I'm not. So you may not need so many respondees, if that makes sense, because they're experts in that field. Rather than the public, who you don't know what the influence comes from, or what their background is, or their expertise.
No, exactly. What we did, so other than the targeted research, I also just put generic polls on LinkedIn, sort of one question. And the difference between the two is so fascinating, because obviously you can't really check through LinkedIn who, you know, what level people are, or what their job roles are, or that kind of stuff. And you get this wider audience who may not have the expertise, as you say. But we've done both just that we can have that in the white paper as a point of comparison, going, you know, the general public said X, but executives said Y, you know, and talk about that differentiation. So it's another interesting way of doing it.
Yeah.
How else do you think you can go about getting your questionnaire out, getting your research paper out?
Well, I mean, I know there are, again, it depends on what the questions are and who the audience are, because I know there are companies that have large databases, for example, that you can target, and they offer incentives to people who have opted into taking questionnaires.
Yeah.
So that was one you can do. I think that can be quite good if you have a question that is more related, which if you require more of a mass answer, I guess. So I don't know, like, what is your favorite style of umbrella during the rain? You know, that you would be more suited to that. But I think once it becomes like hyper targeted for a very specific set of people, I think a lot of the times it's about the network that you have,
Yeah.
your own personal connections or databases. Because in that case, I think you can understand the audience a little bit more and have more control over the people that you're asking, rather than, because I think you can get quite a lot of outliers in the large in the large re outreaches to through companies that have massive databases. You can't be 100% sure on who's answering. Maybe it's just some like kids who have signed up to it, just thought, oh yeah, I'm gonna get a free Argos voucher or something if I do this, you know, like some 16-year-old kids or something, when you actually who have said that they're 36 or something like that. You know, you can't be 100% sure.
But it's this is also it's an important point about understanding who you want to answer. This is you know I get very frustrated when people put on LinkedIn or Facebook, look at my new logo, what do you think, right? And then they get all these random people giving commentary. Like you have no idea if that opinion is your target audience or not. It's absolute waste. So the same with research, right? You need to make sure you're getting the answers from the people you actually want to get the answers from. And that's such an important point, right?
Yeah. And I think there's also, you need to do, need to balance it with some desktop research as well, just a kind of a benchmarking or validation. It's rare that there is zero information about the topic you're
Yeah,
asking.
I agree.
So there will be some additional information, additional data here and there or in whatever format. And I think it's quite important to have that in mind. As some kind of benchmark. And also because if you find something different, it'd be quite nice to draw comparisons, create a bit of debate. After all, that's a lot of the time, that's what you want to do is create a discussion, right?
Yeah, talking points.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of what my hope is with the research I'm going to be doing, is that it will provoke some reactions in terms of maybe it's something new, maybe it's something that people want to discuss a little bit more, just to create the engagement. Obviously, it wants to be correct. I don't want to
Yeah.
create engagement because everyone goes, what you're doing is absolute bull. It makes no sense. Obviously not. But
Unless
yeah,
you're Elon Musk.
unless you're Elon Musk, yeah. What's
Then you
the guy? He's doing drugs now, apparently.
Oh.
So I saw that in today's news. This is his the new headache apparently for the Tesla board. It was his love of ketamine.
Oh dear, Elon. Also talking incentives, are you going to be incentivizing? Because that's another thought process I went to. The incentive I used was getting first access to the results as well as to the white paper before it goes public. So that, in terms of the one I've just recently done, that was the incentive I used, is you can see the results and the white paper before everyone else. But we did consider whether we should look at other kind of incentives. Have you looked at that?
No, I mean, I had similar thoughts in terms of like the first access to the paper. To be honest, I haven't thought too much about the in if I wanted to do any other incentives outside of that. And I'm not sure if it's really applicable to my audience.
Definitely audience related, right?
Yeah.
CEOs are not going to respond to a £100 M&S gift voucher
Some of the people I'm
or
talking to,
pen.
yeah, exactly. So my audience are going to be probably a bit more high net worth, and they're more interested in like knowledge. I think that's power for them now, is knowledge and a some kind of advantage within the market rather than, you know, yeah, £100 Argos voucher. It's not really appealing to them. But I they definitely have their place as incentives.
Agree.
Again, if you're doing, I don't know, selling a life insurance product and you want to speak to 2,000 people in your audience who are in the lower socioeconomic band, for example, the vouchers can work really, really well. And that's definitely worth considering. but yeah, it's just got to be appropriate to your audience, as always. You really need to think about that. And it can also become, lose the value of your questioning as well. I think if I went to my particular ones I'm working with now, that I'll give you £25 off at Marks and Spencer's, it would somehow change the value of my questionnaire. I feel it would add an element that of awkwardness to it. It just wouldn't work. I think it would look strange.
Yeah, it is definitely a consideration. The other consideration, and you know me on incentives, is please think through the fulfillment. There's nothing worse than promising incentives and then not being able to fulfill, or fulfilling late, or being awkward about fulfillment. So make sure you're doing something that's not a pain in the butt for you to sit and lick envelopes for the rest of your life while you're trying to fulfill. But so think through that part of the process as well, because the cost of that needs to be added to your total cost, right?
Yeah, no, that's very important. I've actually done some questionnaires in the past, and some of them I've just dropped out of them immediately, because you need to click through X, Y, and Z websites and offers and sign up to this, this, and that before you get to the questionnaire, before you receive your £100 off or something. And after 30 seconds of doing some of those, I'm like, no, this is not worth it. I feel like I'm going to get a virus in my computer somehow. That's what I think.
Let's give you that feel.
Yeah, I think that's what I was angling at a little bit when I was talking about, with my kind of high net worth audience, going at them with those kind of incentives. It feels like a trap or something. It doesn't, because it doesn't feel right for that particular type of person. And I felt that before. I'm not putting myself in the high net worth people. I'm saying I felt that the buggy, virusy feel or something, yeah, the trap, and I don't like that. I don't like it. It's just not appropriate.
No, you must think about your audience. And then the other thing that sometimes people forget about is, what else do you need to know? So often people just focus on the 5 or 10 or whatever questions that they want. But in terms of data collection, what else could be valuable to your results? So gender, is it appropriate or not? Does it give you a skew? Age bands, you know, with title, years in the business, you know, all that kind of additional data that's not necessarily about the questions you're trying to get answered, but can give you insights in how you read the data. And often I find when people are doing research questionnaires, they forget those additional things.
Yeah. No, that is really important, because it can completely skew the answers. If you're talking about perfume, let's say, and the majority of the answers you get back were actually male, that's going to be different to if 70% of your respondents were female, probably, if you're talking about what kind of smell you like. I know this is a random example.
Very random example, but we'll go with it. Have you been buying perfume lately?
I did, actually. I bought some,
there we go.
I bought some perfume for my mum for Christmas, and we went into the perfume shop. I went with my dad and my girlfriend, and we all had completely different opinions, actually, by the way. Also the lady working at the shop as well, and we were going through hundreds of these things, just another thing that just confused the hell out of me. It's kind of the same with offers. You know, when you get an offer and it's not one offer on one single thing, it's like you get this and you get all these other things, you suddenly get overwhelmed. That's how I felt like in the shop. A, you walk into the shop and it just smells of lots of different perfumes, and then they come over to you with 10,000 sticks that they spray on, and after a while they all smell the same, you have no idea. And then one that I thought smelled nice and fruity before, I come back to it and it smells like metal. I don't know. Anyway, we all have very different opinions, and that's why I was talking about perfume. But you're right, the age, the gender, the demographic, the culture, the religion, all of that can make a huge difference on the opinions and the bias of the questionnaire.
Of the results, yeah.
And but are you using quantitative or qualitative data? And do you think one has more in a place with a small pool of respondees versus a large pool of respondees?
It's a little bit of a mix. So most of it, because it's senior executives that don't have a lot of time. So I've done a lot of it, multiple choice, tick box, quick, quick, quick. But then I've got two open-ended questions for feedback. So I've done a bit of a mix just because I didn't think just having the tick, tick, tick would give me enough. But if I just did open-ended by the end of the first one, they'd be tired of typing and bail. So yeah, so I've done a bit of a mix. Again, it depends on what you're trying to achieve, right? What's the outcome you need? And you know, what do you want to achieve with what you're getting? And even back to what else do you ask? In my case, gender was not applicable, but years in the senior position were, you know, because it's a little bit different if you've been in a senior position for 6 months, you know, you've been CEO for 6 months or whatever, versus I've been CEO for 10 years, right? There's a different headspace. So I asked that to help see if there was a difference, maybe validate my assumption that there's a difference.
Yeah, and that's an important thing to do as well, is to remove any assumptions that you have, because that your assumption is based on your bias as well. So it's quite good to remove that. The other thing is, it also depends on the resource you have. If you have, you're lucky enough to have a team of researchers with you in your company or externally, qualitative data could be an absolute nightmare. Or if you had a 2,000 respondees and they were open-ended questions, which does have its place, because sometimes you can't answer a yes or no or a multiple choice, but just be aware of the amount of information you have to go through.
Absolutely.
If you're one man band and you only have qualitative questions, you really need to think about how you phrase the questions, and because if you're going to get long essays back from thousands of people, you're going to spend the rest of the year sifting through those and understanding the results you've got and how to demonstrate that. Like, then what do you put that in? You can put it in a graph, probably not. So you need to take that into account as well, the resource that you have at hand.
Absolutely. Well, good luck with your research, Alex.
Thank you.
I look forward to seeing how it goes.
Yeah, me too. All right. Well, go and enjoy the snow.
You too. Bye.
Cheers, bye. That wraps up this episode of Giraffes Don't Eat Steak. Thanks for joining us. I hope you found value in our discussion and got some new ideas to apply to your own business. Tune in next week for another round of marketing insights and inspiration. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave us a review and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We appreciate you listening. Catch you next time on Giraffes Don't Eat Steak.